Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us this morning. My name is Shaylin Dopka, and I'm a health promotion specialist at PCCC, and I'll be moderating today's webinar, E-Cigarettes Evidence to Guide Action. If you're having trouble logging into the webinar, please call the 1-800 number for PCCC. This help number is 1-800-363-7822. And for those of you who are logged into our webinar, you will see the presentation on your right. On the left hand of the screen, you will see a chat box. We have set aside time for questions during and after the presentation, but at any time during the presentation, feel free to enter questions into this box and we will address them when we can. Please note that during today's webinar, the phone lines will be muted to minimize background noise. Before we begin, we'd like to get a better sense of how many have joined us today. Please indicate how many people are attending today's webinar with you by simply clicking on the circle beside the appropriate number. Perfect. Thank you very much, everyone. Now I'd like to introduce you to our presenters. Dr. Rob Schwartz is the Executive Director for the Ontario Tobacco Research Unit and Associate Professor at the Dalhousie School of Public Health, University of Toronto, with interest in research, evaluation, and knowledge exchange. And Dr. Bo Zhang is a Senior Research Officer with OTRU. Bo received her master's degree in public health from Adelaide University in Australia and her PhD in epidemiology from the Dalhousie School of Public Health, University of Toronto. Her research interests include the epidemiology of tobacco and e-cigarette use and the impact of tobacco policy on health. Take it away, Rob and Bo.
Thank you and welcome everybody. It's great to be here and we're delighted to be speaking with you today, and I mean with you, not at you, about e-cigarettes. The title of our talk is E-Cigarettes, Evidence to Guide Action. This morning I was thinking we actually should have put a question mark at the end of that because if any of you hope to leave this morning with a really good understanding of what the evidence is, and what we should do about e-cigarettes in light of the evidence, well, you might as well shut off right now. So we hate to disappoint you, but we are true to science, and it's our role, actually, to tell you what science can and cannot do on October 27th, 2015, in terms of guiding action with evidence. Fasten your seatbelts and away we go. In case any of you are wondering what e-cigarettes are, this is a picture of some of the various kinds. There's actually more different shapes and sizes and colors and flavors than one can imagine. Basically, these are battery-powered devices that are used to heat and vaporize a solution. The solution contains propylene glycol, flavorings, and sometimes nicotine. The flavorings, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of different flavors on the market, and they vary from fruit, candy, to tobacco. So we'll see in the data later on, a good proportion of people who are vaping, that's what we call the action, it's not smoking, it's not using e-cigarettes, it's vaping. A good proportion of vapers are vaping tobacco-flavored e-cigarettes. Sorry, I'm just getting used to the technology here. There we go. This study that we are presenting today, it's really a family of studies funded under the guise of the Health System Research Fund of the Ontario Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care. We received about $500,000 over the course of 2 years, really a year and a half, to conduct these studies. There was a competition, and we were successful in that competition. We call the study RESIG, Research on E-Cigarettes. I'm going to just tell you a little bit about the study. I'm not going to read all of the investigator team, just that you can see on the slide in front of you that we have two PIs, myself and Laurie Zawarteo from CAMH, the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, and Thomas Eisenberg from the United States, and the rest of the names here will be familiar to those of you who are in tobacco control in Ontario. So this is really a partnership between the Ontario Tobacco Research Unit, CAMH, and the Non-Smokers' Rights Association in terms of the Canadian people on board. We have several people who've been involved in actually conducting the research, and these are the folks at OTRUE who have and are still involved. Bo Zhang is here, so you're going to be hearing from her shortly. A lot of the evidence that we're presenting today was created by the team of Muhannad Malas, Alian Nur Mohammed, and Jan van der Tempel. And Diane Van Abbey, who's in the room but won't be presenting today, is known to many of you as our librarian or our information coordinator, and she's the one who's found most of the studies that we will be talking about today. We have, as in all of our studies, a knowledge exchange advisory committee, and this is to ensure that we are actually looking at the things that are of importance to the field, and that the field is getting real-time information to guide us and then to get the message out. I'll just mention now that we have already three newsletters that have been published. You can find them on OTRUE's website, www.otrue.org, and they summarize some of the emerging findings. So you'll see that we have on our KEEK, our Knowledge Exchange Advisory Committee, people from across the Smoke-Free Ontario strategy, including representation from the TCAN. Jennifer McFarlane is being replaced by her replacement in the Northwest TCAN, Daniel DePuter, on this Knowledge Exchange Advisory Committee. These are the questions, we call them research questions. They're not sort of formal research questions, but these were the targeted research questions that the Ministry of Health put out in its call for proposals. And we are venturing to provide, I shouldn't say provide answers, we're venturing to address each one of these questions. To say that we have conclusive answers to any of these would be wrong. To say that we are making progress in understanding all of these would be correct. Today we're not going to focus on all of the questions. We don't have all of the information ready for us yet, so we already had a question. Even before the webinar started, somebody asked whether what is the evidence into the health effects of vaping. So indeed, we are doing a systematic review of that. It's not finished yet. It's in process as we speak. And so we're not actually going to speak to that. I'll just say one word about the health effects, is that there is certainly vaping, nicotine or non-nicotine e-cigarettes is not completely benign. How much harm it causes and what kind of harm is really what is at issue. And there are studies across the range, and here there are studies of varying qualities and varying methodologies. It's actually very complicated to provide a one-sentence or even one-hour answer to this question. We will be addressing that in future webinars and seminars and products that we put out. The question about effectiveness as a cessation aid, we are addressing today. We have some fairly good responses to that question. Then the relationship between e-cigarette use and uptake of tobacco smoking and the questions of prevalence, we're going to talk about a little bit, but we're not going to get into it too much. So you asked a question about how much money we got, $500,000 over 2 years. So just want to clarify that $500,000 really is more like 60% of that is what we have available to do the actual work in the field, because there are indirect costs that need to be taken off of that, and there's money set aside for what's called administrative health research questions. Okay. I'm going to move forward in the webinar. We'll pause at a certain point to address the questions that are coming up on the screen to my left. What are you going to learn here? As I said, we're going to talk about e-cigarettes and their effectiveness as cessation aids. We're going to get an understanding of what is going on with the use of e-cigarettes in Ontario. So this is really novel. It's information that is not out there yet, and it's based on the research that we have done here in Ontario. We are also going to discuss a little bit some findings that, of a systematic analysis of social media. So we looked at Twitter feeds, over the course of a whole year, and how they relate to the cessation aid effectiveness question. We're going to present that today. We have a bunch of sub-studies going on, and we're not presenting the results of all of them today because simply they still are in process. So the comprehensive realist-informed knowledge synthesis, we're presenting a piece of that today, the piece that answers the cessation aid effectiveness question. We are presenting some analysis of data from existing surveys in Ontario. You'll learn about what we know from the population surveys. We've created a longitudinal panel of adult smokers and recent smokers, and Bo Zhang shortly is going to talk about the results of those. We've surveyed youth and young adults, and Bo's going to talk about those. We also have done in-depth interviews with some of those folks to see about their patterns of use and why they're using it. The social media analysis we're going to talk about. And then we have two lab studies, which are being conducted by Lori Zoroteo out of CAMH. We're not going to be discussing those today, so that'll be for another time. And finally, and this is of utmost importance, we have invited an expert panel, which includes the foremost scientists from around the world. We have Linda Bald coming from the UK. We have Alan Shahidi coming from American University in Lebanon. We have a representative of the Centers for Disease Control in the United States. And we have Thomas Eisenberg from Virginia Commonwealth University. And all of these folks are going to be giving a seminar webinar together with the OTRU and CAMH teams on January the 13th. So mark in your calendars that a lot more results will be coming to you on January the 13th. There's going to be a possibility for those of you in Toronto to come in person. It's going to be held at Hart House at University of Toronto. And for others, we will be broadcasting by live webinar. That's on January the 13th, and we'll be sending out more information about that. So this is just the order of our presentation today, and I've already talked about what the things are that we're going to do. So maybe we can pause there. I saw that Michael Purley had his hand up earlier, and just take a couple of the questions that have been coming in. So as Michael's getting ready to speak, or is he going to write down?
He just asked.
Okay, Michael says, what statement can be made with regard to the relative toxicity of e-cigarettes versus tobacco cigarettes? Thank you, Michael. So, you know, we're not getting in depth today on the question of the toxicity, which we are looking at in our study of health effects. I have not seen anybody who would argue that e-cigarettes are more toxic than cigarettes. The question of how toxic, what kind of e-cigarettes are, under what conditions to vapors and to people being exposed to secondhand vaping is really a very challenging question to answer. We'll be addressing that at another opportunity. And Richard Gould had asked, will you comment on Public Health England's position on e-cigarettes as part of the webinar? Yes, we can talk about that a little bit later on, but I want to, I guess, first get our results out. Okay, so moving forward, we're going to start with our knowledge synthesis, and we actually have a polling question for you. This is just to sort of get us going. Do you know of smokers, any smokers, who have tried, not succeeded, just tried e-cigarettes in order to quit smoking? You can say yes, no, or not sure, but everybody should be voting here. I'd love to see the numbers jumping. I don't know. Can the people, can the respondents see those numbers as well? Yeah, so you can see what's going on. So the vast majority of people, 114, 15, 16, it keeps going up, have actually, they know of smokers who have tried smoking, who have tried quitting smoking using e-cigarettes. Okay, and so that is an interesting just beginning to our discussion, because if so many of us know of people who have tried quitting using e-cigarettes, then the question of the effectiveness of e-cigarettes as a cessation aid is really vital. And indeed, we will see, Bill will present shortly our findings about smokers, how many, what proportion of smokers in our panel are trying to use e-cigarettes to quit smoking. A large number of smokers are trying e-cigarettes at one point or another. This is our PRISMA chart. It shows how we went about doing our knowledge synthesis. So we started with 1,900 or so studies that we identified. 1,000 or so of those were duplicates. We screened for eligibility. We extracted the articles. And then we rated the quality of those articles. And there were 91 weak, 117 moderate, and 58 strong. And then we looked to see which of these studies actually addressed the question about the effectiveness of e-cigarettes as a cessation aid, and we came to 48. So I need to point out about the way that we did this is that we were very inclusive in terms of study design. This is not only about randomized control trial studies, this is also about cross-sectional studies and indeed more qualitative studies, but we did rate the quality of those studies in a very systematic way. You know, there are all kinds of reviews that have already been published on cessation aid effectiveness. We don't believe that any of those reviews have actually done such a comprehensive look. Most of them are only looking at RCTs, and none of them actually use the type of quality assessment tool that that we have been using. So we came to 48 studies. And these studies, we, for 49 studies, these studies, we found only three strong studies. Half of them remaining were weak and half were moderate. So this already gives you a understanding that even though it seems that every Monday and Thursday now we're getting a new study on e-cigarettes, to date, we do not have very strong evidence about their effectiveness as cessation aids. We did an overall assessment of the quality of evidence using the grade approach, and that's what you will see as we move forward. So what can we tell you? Yeah, unfortunately not very much. You know, I can state quite conclusively that the evidence to date is inconclusive about the cessation aid effectiveness of e-cigarettes. I know that's disappointing for all of you. And I want to then put in an additional polling question now. So we asked you before if you know of anybody who had tried to quit using e-cigarettes. Now we're asking you, do you know of smokers who have used e-cigarettes to successfully quit smoking for good? Okay, that doesn't mean they succeeded for a day or a week, but that they succeeded in the long term. So we're not going to go to the gold standard of 12-month abstinence, do you know of people who have absolutely stopped smoking regular cigarettes because they used e-cigarettes? Okay, we'll just give a moment for the numbers to pick up. So this is actually, very interesting. And I think, Bo, who's our analyst, will actually do the study afterwards. Of course, you're a very unrepresentative sample of anything. Nevertheless, I think the numbers are coming up, you know, probably similar to what we're seeing. Most people, okay, who know, we don't know which of these people, well, anyhow, most people are saying that they do not know of people who have successfully quit smoking tobacco cigarettes for good. On the other hand, 39 out of 151, which is not nothing. It's it is a substantial number. Now 40 do know of people who have stopped using cigarettes for good as a result of vaping. So there is lots of this kind of what we call anecdotal evidence out there. Lots of stories about people having quit, and interestingly, you know, the vast majority of people who have tried vaping in order to quit smoking cigarettes in the studies that we've seen, the vast majority actually do not quit for good. But that isn't completely surprising. I want to clarify that. Because the vast majority of smokers who try NRT, nicotine replacement therapy, also don't succeed in quitting for good. So then the question becomes, is there any efficacy at all to using e-cigarettes? I'm not going to answer that question now. We're going to continue. I want to wait until we've presented the findings of the adult panel and of the youth and young adult panel before we actually get back to it. Okay. Moving forward. So the results of our review are that in terms of absolute cessation, the evidence is very low to low. Okay, and it's because of the studies in the of weaknesses in the methodology of the studies that have been conducted until now. The evidence for even reducing the number of cigarettes that a smoker uses is still weak. Its grade assessment is low to moderate, so there's slightly more and better evidence for reduction of the number of cigarettes than there is for cessation. We also did look at secondary outcomes having to do with reducing the urges to smoke and withdrawal symptoms. I didn't put that into the slides, but these studies also are rated as low in grades. So again, there are some studies. There are individual studies for each of these outcomes. The outcomes being cessation, reduction in use of cigarettes, and a decrease in urges to smoke and withdrawal symptoms. For each of these, we will find individual studies that do find positive results. But the overall assessments of the studies, when we take into account their quality and the number of strong studies, is that currently we don't know. So this doesn't mean that e-cigarettes are not effective cessation aids. It just means that the evidence is such that we don't know whether or not e-cigarettes are effective cessation aids. So I think we can take a pause here from the presentation and then just look at some of the questions that are coming up in the chat. So curious about the eligibility studies, why were 600 of them excluded before the quality evaluation? Because they weren't relevant to the topics that we were using is the general answer. How many of the studies had tobacco or pharmaceutical sponsorship? We did look at that, and we didn't exclude them outright, but we did pay attention to that in the extraction of the data and the quality assessment. I can't tell you offhand how many there were, but most of them are not. Okay, it exists, and we have a way of looking. We can't know always for sure, but we do screen for that. Rebecca Shams wants to know, is the definition of quitting just stopping tobacco cigarettes use or stopping e-cig use as well? For our purposes here, we're talking about quitting the use of regular cigarettes. It is a good question about do people continue to use e-cigarettes or not. We have some emerging evidence from our adult panel about that. There's not a whole lot of study about that. The time has been short. There's also a question of whether there's nicotine or non-nicotine in those e-cigarettes. Good question, though. Augment e-cigarette with cutting down. Yeah, so those are the people who have reduced the number of cigarettes they're using. They are using the e-cigarettes in order to continue smoking. So that's a hypothesis. We don't know for sure. It will seem, I think, as Bo will show in the next section, that there are smokers who are using e-cigarettes for various reasons. Some of them are using them because they want to be able to smoke inside in their units or in their workplaces, and they just use them when they can't smoke the regular cigarettes. Some of them are using e-cigarettes as a way to quit, and really there are various patterns of use. The state of evidence is up to date until the end of February 2015. However, I will say that we are continuing to collect the new literature, and we will do an update on this before the end of March 2016. It's just impossible to continuously update the quality review. How big of a problem is tobacco smoking versus marijuana among youth and young adults? So not directly relevant to our talk today, but amongst the prevalence of past 30-day use of marijuana is much higher than the prevalence of past 30-day use of cigarettes. However, current use, so daily use of cigarettes, is a much more problematic behavior than is past 30 days of marijuana. It's a big question. We can talk about that another time. Can you comment on what type of a study would be needed to come to a conclusion about e-cigs as a cessation aid? So, I mean, good question. It's not just one study. It would be several studies done in a rigorous fashion. We would like to see some randomized controlled trials in there. We would like to see some good population studies with sufficient numbers and sufficient controls for things that haven't been done afterwards. So I'll take one more question now, and then we really should move forward. Your findings seem to counter Public Health England report, which references Cochrane Review, finds that EC can help people. I'm glad you're asking that, Roberto. We're not countering that. So you have to be very careful in reading the report coming under the UK. So we're not saying from the evidence that we've seen that e-cigarettes cannot help cigarette people quit smoking. We're just saying that we don't know for sure. And the Cochrane review that that work is based upon is only looked at a couple of studies. So again, the evidence is not sufficient to say the evidence is not sufficient to say right now that e-cigarettes are for sure an effective way to quit smoking. The Public Health England report also suggests that people who have tried already other forms of cessation may try e-cigarettes, and it's not at all conclusive in its language about saying that e-cigarettes are definitively an effective cessation aid. Okay, I'm going to continue now. We can come back to the rest of the questions as we move forward, because otherwise we won't get in through even the most important parts of our presentation today. We're just going to say a few words about what we know about the prevalence and the patterns of behaviors of e-cigarette use in Ontario. We don't know a whole lot from our population studies, but what we have comes mainly from the Canadian Tobacco and Drug Use Survey, coming out of Health Canada, and this is 2013 data. We're only presenting the data from Ontario, and we need to remember 2013 is already a couple of years ago. The numbers are relatively low. The sample is not huge, so we need to take all this with a grain of salt. This first slide is about ever tried an e-cigarette. Most people who ever try an e-cigarette don't continue to use e-cigarettes. They try it once, maybe twice, and they don't continue. Nevertheless, ever tried in their whole lifetime an e-cigarette, of current smokers, 73%. So, you know, that's interesting. That's a lot. That's a high proportion of smokers have tried them. Of never smokers, so this is also interesting because, we are concerned if indeed there are a deleterious health effects of e-cigarettes. We don't want anybody to be picking them up. And 8% of never smokers between the ages of 15 and 24 years have tried e-cigarettes in their lifetime. You can see that the proportions of people in general amongst young adults who've tried e-cigarettes is 16 and 18% for those respective age groups. Of smokers, now this pie is only of smokers, the total is smokers. It's interesting, close to half, 43% tried e-cigarettes, but not in order to stop smoking. So why did they try them? Well, we'll see. I think we've got a slide on that later. They're curious. We'll see what it tastes like. Maybe they want to continue to smoke while they're using them. On the other hand, close to 60% have tried vaping in order to try quitting to smoke. The next slide talks about the whether or not there's nicotine. So just to remind us, in Canada, nicotine e-cigarettes are not legal. So, you know, there's been some question marks around there because people tell us, well, what do you mean they're not legal? They're solid being sold openly in vape shops. You can go in and you see the nicotine right there in front of you and they're selling it. Well, e-nicotine cigarettes are not legal in Canada. Nicotine cartridges or liquids are not legal in Canada. And e-cigarettes not for nicotine use that make a health claim are not legal in Canada. The only e-cigarettes that are legal in Canada are e-cigarettes not for nicotine, that do not have nicotine, and that do not make a health claim. So those are the only ones. Nevertheless, we see that 26% of respondents, this is from CTADS again, the Canadian Tobacco and Drug Use Survey, and that 26% of people say that they are using e-cigarettes that have nicotine in them. And 53% will perhaps say they did not use nicotine e-cigarettes, but there's 21% who did not know whether or not they had nicotine in the e-cigarettes that they were using. So we're going to, that's really about all we can tell you at the population level right now about the prevalence of e-cigarettes in Ontario. And let me just see, yeah. We're going to move on now to our findings from our panel of adult smokers, and just a couple of words about the panel first, where it comes from. Okay. So we were successful in recruiting over 2,000 people, actually, to a longitudinal panel of e-cigarette users. So we, in this study, we were only looking at smokers or recent smokers, and we recruited these people mainly from our own smokers panel and from people who have used Stop. We connect with these people almost exclusively through our web surveys and through email. And we did a baseline survey about 6 months ago to just find out, well, who's using e-cigarettes, what kind of, we have a huge survey. And we're going to present only some of the findings from that survey. We're just completing the 6 month follow-up of these people. We managed to get over half of them to respond to our six-month follow-up, and we don't quite have those results yet. Those we will present next time around. So Beau's going to give us some of the findings from our panel. So again, these are not population representative, but we do think that they represent smokers who have used cessation supports recently, and they were sent an email saying, will you respond to a survey about e-cigarette use? We made clear that they did not have to have used e-cigarettes, so this is not only of e-cigarette users. Go ahead.
Okay, so now I'm going to talk about the finding from adult panel. This is an online survey of Ontario adults who smoke at least one tobacco cigarette in their lifetime. We recruited just under 2,000. And this slide shows the sample characteristics. We can see that the majority of our participants were middle-aged, 35 to 54 years old, and were female, white, with high education, married, and employed. And this slide shows the prevalence of e-cigarette use among all participants in this adult panel. And we can see that the majority of our participants were ever users at 64%. Ever users were those who ever used at least one puff of an e-cigarette in their lifetime. And 42 of the old participants were former users. Former users were ever users who didn't use an e-cigarette in the last 30 days. And 22% of participants were current users. Current users were ever users who used an e-cigarette in the last 30 days. and 11% of current daily users are those who used e-cigarettes daily in the last 30 days. And also, we look at new users, 36% of all our participants were new users. New users were those who used their first e-cigarette in the last 12 months. And we can see from this slide is among all ever users, 66% of ever users were former users, only 34% were current users. So the majority of e-cigarette users stopped using e-cigarettes already. And this slide shows the prevalence of current use of e-cigarettes by some demographic factors. We can see that the prevalence didn't vary by age or gender, but significantly varied by smoking status. Current smokers, especially occasional smokers, had a much higher prevalence compared to never or former smokers. And this slide shows who were established e-cigarette users. Established e-cigarette users were those current daily users of e-cigarettes. We conducted a logistic regression, included all social demographic factors, smoking factors, and the different types of e-cigarette use, patterns of use. I'm not going to show everything, but I want to highlight two factors here. One is the lifetime of vape sessions. Those who used more than 100 vape lessons in their lifetime, almost six times higher than those who used less than 100 vape sessions in their lifetime to be established e-cigarette users. And those who used the third generation of e-cigarettes were almost eight times higher than those who used the first generation to be established e-cigarette users. And this slide shows where people used their last e-cigarette. The majority we can see that used their last e-cigarette at home, especially among current e-cigarette users. Even among former e-cigarette users, 50% used their last e-cigarette at home. And among former e-cigarette users, they had a higher percentage of using their last e-cigarette at a friend's house than current users. Then we asked how people perceive the risk of using e-cigarettes daily. We can see that current users had a very low percentage of perceiving this as a great risk, only at 4% compared to former users at 15 and the never user at 20%. And current users had a higher percentage perceiving no risk at 20% compared to never users only at 6%. Then we conducted another logistic regression to look at the association between use of e-cigarettes and quitting tobacco. We look at three outcomes. One is quitting for at least 1 month, and another one is quitting for at least 6 months. And for these two outcomes, we restricted analysis to current smokers and recent quitters. Recent quitters were those who quit tobacco cigarettes within the last 12 months. And then for the outcome of quitting attempt, we restricted analysis to current smokers only. So we, in the model, we included all social demographic factors, use of different types of e-cigarette use, and also the quitting aids, including NRT, bupropion, and varenicline, and also behavioral support. And here we only show the significant factors. Compared to old adults, younger people were more likely to quit for short term, and those who used over 100 vape sessions are more likely than those never used to quit for short term. And for the long term quitting, Still, those who use more than 100 whiplashes in their lifetime were more likely than never users to quit. And for the quitting attempt, there was non-significant factor from any patterns of e-cigarette use. The two significant factors were NRT and bupropion oral varenicline compared to non-users. And now I'm going to present some findings from a survey of youth and young adults. But first, I think there is a polling question. Do you know of non-smokers who have tried vaping e-cigarettes?
Okay, very, very interesting findings here, because this is one of the big questions relating to e-cigarettes. All right, if indeed they are harmful in some way or other, then are we creating a whole new generation of people who are starting to use a harmful substance? Now, I don't want to carry that too far, because we just asked you if you know of anybody who's tried vaping an e-cigarette. And I would venture to say that of the 66 of you who know of people who have tried vaping an e-cigarette, that most of those people that you know about probably tried once or twice and then did not continue. And what we don't know yet enough about is how many of those people continue to use e-cigarettes and what kind of e-cigarettes they're using. So go for it, Bob.
Okay, thanks. So in this online survey of youth and young adults, we recruited 364 Ontario youth aged 15 to 19 and young adults aged 20 to 29. And all of these participants were ever users of an e-cigarette. And this slide shows the sample characteristics. And the majority of participants were young adults, aged 20 to 29, female, white, with law education, high school or less education, single, and employees or students. And among all participants, 57% were former users and 43% were current users. So similar to the adult panel survey, the majority of ever users stopped using e-cigarettes already. And again, this one shows the prevalence of current use of e-cigarettes by some social demographic factors. The prevalence didn't vary by age, but males had a higher prevalence of current use than females, 53% versus 36%. And it significantly varied by smoking status as well. Former smokers had the highest prevalence of current use at 53%. Followed by current users. But although the prevalence was low among non-smokers, still 30% of non-smokers were current use of e-cigarettes. And this slide shows who were established e-cigarette users. We only show significant factors here. One is the smoking status. Compared to non-smokers, only former smokers were more likely to be daily users of e-cigarettes, and that those who used 50 or more puffs per day compared to those used less than 50, and those who used the third generation of e-cigarettes compared to those who used the first generation more likely to be established e-cigarette users. And this slide shows the places of using the last e-cigarettes, similar to the adult panel. Current users, the majority of them use their last e-cigarette at home. And among former users, there was a higher prevalence of using last e-cigarettes at a friend house, 29 versus 19% among current users. And again, we asked the perception about the risk of using e-cigarettes daily. Similarly, we found that current users had a very low percentage of perceiving this as a great risk, only 7% compared to former users at 15%. And the no risk percentage was much higher among current users at 19% compared to 9% among former users. And then we looked at the association between use of e-cigarettes and quitting, and the only significant factors was the generation or size of e-cigarettes. Those who used the third generation of e-cigarettes were more likely than those who used the first generation to quit smoking short-term. And for the long-term quitting and the quitting attempts, we found no significant factors at all.
Okay, so before we go on to the social media analysis, just we're going to pause and have a look at the question. So thank you, Karen, or I'm actually Simon. We neglected to tell you how we recruited the youth and young adult panel. We're going to, and we forgot. So thank you for mentioning that. This is a convened sample. We used Facebook primarily to recruit. We used the Facebook sites of the health units in particular were helpful in getting this. We recruited 350 or so youth and young adults, and this is not a population representative at all. So what we can use from this is mostly just looking at the patterns. So, when you see that 30% of the people in the panel who were never smokers used e-cigarettes, it does tell you something. Okay, it doesn't mean that 30% of youth and young adults in Ontario who are never smokers have also used e-cigarettes. Really, we're looking at the patterns here. So where are people using them? It's interesting. There's a question here about when they said at home, does it mean in the home or outside of the home? We don't know. The question is just at home, and your interpretation of that is probably as good as ours. We cannot say for sure. John Stevenson about the lifetime vape sessions. So actually, we're a bit of pioneering in this, trying to measure and to come to understanding of how to define established users of e-cigarettes. And we developed this survey on the basis of the best possible measurement tools out there, and we've actually shared this through the Society for Research on Nicotine and Tobacco and a subgroup of folks who are e-cigarette researchers around the world, and people are now starting to use our questions about vape sessions, etc. It's still emerging, so I wouldn't start using 100 vape sessions for sure. This is exploratory in nature. Also, a vape session, we're trying as best we can, so we ask how many puffs do you have in a vape session? Because for some people, they'll sit for all day long, and they'll have a vape session. They'll have the e-cigarette on their desk, and they'll just take a vape from time to time. For others, we'll go home in the evening, and at 8 o'clock, they'll sit down, and they'll vape for half an hour. And in that half-hour session, they may have 100 puffs right there. So, what's important, there are several indicators here. On how many days do you vape? How many vape sessions do you have in a day? How long is that vape session? How many puffs do you have in that vape session? But just to complicate things further, an e-cigarette is not an e-cigarette. It's not an e-cigarette because you've got different generations. And then even within a generation, the product, the e-cigarette is delivering different levels of whatever it is it's delivering to different people. So it has to do with what kind of liquid if you put in, what's the cartridge like. It has to do with how good is the heating mechanism, and it also has to do with how strong are you inhaling. So the variation is huge. So one of the findings from here, which is also coming up in other studies, is that people who use the latter generations, which have bigger tanks or their tanks or mods, they've got bigger volumes of things, better heating mechanisms, they're able to get a lot more of the vapor into their lungs, are having different effects. We haven't spoken much about nicotine versus non-nicotine, and we did analyze these findings by nicotine versus non-nicotine, overall it would seem that people who use nicotine probably are more likely to reduce or to stop quitting altogether. But then we don't know how much nicotine they're actually getting in. There's another question here about the addictiveness of e-cigarettes. So we don't have a conclusive answer to that. Again, those who are using non-nicotine e-cigarettes, we don't know why it would be addictive. The nicotine is the addictive substance in tobacco. And then even those who are using nicotine, we don't know how much nicotine they're getting in. So we don't have a conclusive answer to that question right now. Are there health benefits for reducing tobacco use through the use of e-cigarettes, even if they don't totally quit tobacco use? So, you know, there's an ongoing scholarly debate about the health benefits of reducing tobacco use. So, I mean, the bottom line on that, if you're continuing to smoke, your chances of ill effects of cancer, heart disease, and respiratory disease, amongst others, is still very high. How much less is it than, you know, it depends how much you were smoking, how much you reduced. It's all very individualized. So, you know, looking at reduction as a harm reduction approach, I think, you know, is a tricky thing to do. I'm not going to give a conclusive answer beyond what I've said. The e-liquids that contain nicotine would be illegal in Canada. The thing is that there's, it seems, no enforcement of this right now. So it's an unusual kind of situation. Would you say that the number of youth or young adults who have tried e-cigarettes only once or twice, even a puff, is similar to the number of youth or young adults who have tried smoking cigarettes one or two times, even a few puffs, and become long-term users? That's a bit of a complicated question. So we do know that the likelihood of, you know, if you've had a cigarette, the likelihood of your continuing to have another cigarette and then becoming established is quite high. So we know that 68% of people who try, who start using cigarettes become established smokers. 68%. We don't know what the proportion of people who start using e-cigarettes are who become established vapors. However, the data that we're seeing now suggests that the majority, even the large majority of people who try e-cigarettes, do not become established. Now, if they were trying e-cigarettes that had really strong delivery of nicotine, so there are e-cigarettes now that deliver as much nicotine as cigarettes. You know, if you try those, are you going to become addicted? I don't know the answer right now, but I'm sure that within a few months we'll have some studies that will be demonstrating that. But those are all very good questions. Do you have any comments on dual use, using cigarettes and using e-cigarettes at the same time? I have some thoughts about that, and it is pretty clear from the patterns that we're seeing in our adult panel and our youth and young adult panel, as well as from other studies, that there are people who are using e-cigarettes in order to continue using cigarettes. So they're having trouble quitting, they can't quit, they can't smoke indoors, or, you know, they can't smoke in their car because their partners don't want them to, or they have kids. So we do see that people are using e-cigarettes in order to continue using cigarettes, and that is a problematic thing. If they're using the e-cigarettes and reducing their number of regular cigarettes that they're using, it goes back to the last question. There may be some harm reduction there, but we cannot know for sure. And in the end, at the population level, and we're all about population health, it's all a question of numbers. Right? How much benefit versus how much harm to how many people from these various possible outcomes. The gateway question, we don't have a definitive answer yet. We're looking at that in another part of our literature synthesis. There is one recent study from the States that is suggestive. It's certainly not conclusive evidence. undoubtedly there are some people who are starting with e-cigarettes and moving to cigarettes. We cannot say if that's a substantial number. We can't say when they do it and when they don't do it. It's still a huge question. In France, when e-cigarettes has been used for a longer time, some people, as they think it's not dangerous, e-cigarette, as the time goes more and more. Do we have a way to follow this issue? And it is worried, especially if they both smoke and use it. Yeah, these are questions, and we are, our adult panel is longitudinal. We're going to continue following these people, and we will have more information from the longitudinal study as we move forward about how long people are using the e-cigarettes, who's using them for a long time, and how, and whether they're continuing to use them with and without e-cigarettes. So I see we do have 5 minutes left, and we do have one other very small part of the presentation to do, and that is the social media analysis. It's quick, but maybe of interest. So what we did is using commonly used approaches in research on social media, and this was new grounds to me and to many of us, but we did bring in consultants to help us do this. What you do is you look at the people who are high authority tweeters. High authority tweeters are the ones who have a lot of followers and are also following a lot of people. We captured the data using an external software company for a full year of tweets. So we looked at the most popular 5% of Twitter users, and they're estimated to generate up to 75% of the activity on Twitter. So this is also interesting education in of itself. So if you really want to make any difference in your tweeting that you're doing, if you're reaching a couple of hundred, a few thousand people even, you're probably not having a whole lot of influence at the population level. And who are the people who are the top influence, and what are they saying about tweeting for e-cigarettes? So here's what we see. 79% of the tweets that we looked at were pro e-cigarettes as cessation aids. In other words, they're saying that e-cigarettes work as cessation aids. But look at this: 45% of the tweets were definitively industry generated. Or related to the industry. Another 10% were fake accounts, so over half are coming from that. And then 32% are from the press, the media, or from public figures, and some of those are industry-related as well. Personal users, only 11% of the tweets in this, and only 2% of the tweets came from people in the health system. That includes both healthcare and public health. That's all we really wanted to say about our social media analysis. And we wanted to leave you with just a few points. Vaping is popular both among youth and adults, particularly adults who smoke. Smokers and younger people appear to have higher prevalence of use. There are hints that substantial numbers of youth and young adult non-smokers are trying e-cigarettes. Hints. Okay, I want to make that clear. Hints. Most ever vapers do not continue vaping. Really important to note. And fewer users perceive using e-cigarettes daily as risky in comparison with non-users. Okay. Yeah. So I see we have a few more questions coming up.
So just before we get to those questions, I know that some people will have to move on. We're getting to our time now. So I just want to remind everybody who does have to leave at 11:30 to please fill out the evaluation survey that we'll be sending afterwards. It will really help with our webinars and help us host future learning opportunities that really meet your needs. So I think we'll stay for a couple minutes, and Rob can answer a few of the questions. We'll try to get to as many as we can. We want to thank everybody who has been able to join us for this hour, and we'll stay on for a couple more minutes and answer the questions. But thank you to everybody who's come onto the webinar.
Yeah, okay, thank you. So the question, the cost question is, I think it's inconclusive also at this point in time. It depends what you're buying, and costs vary quite substantially from venue to venue and from type of e-cigarette to e-cigarette. So they're not necessarily, initially at least, less expensive than regular cigarettes. Yeah, Roberto, you know, I wish I could say differently, but the evidence is inconclusive at this point in time. And that's why we have the precautionary principle. I don't think we should be embarrassed about using it. There are certainly hints ill health effects of e-cigarettes. Because of that, you know, just going on ahead and saying, yeah, just use e-cigarettes however you want, with whatever you want in them, is likely not a good idea from a population health perspective. It is shown that e-cigarette vapor is not harmful, or has, if it is shown. The question is, you know, if it wasn't harmful at all, for sure, because it's less harmful for a cigarette user to use. But if there is some harm, it depends how much harm there is. And this is what we don't have a handle on. Again, it's a population health level calculus that needs to be done. So how many smokers of regular cigarettes are going to move to e-cigarettes and decrease their harm by how much in comparison with how many non-smokers, people who would never have picked up smoking, are going to start vaping and even have small harms, but how much of that small harm is there going to be with what effect? We don't know enough yet to really say. The PowerPoint is going to be available. Thoughts on why most ever vapers do not continue? Do we have anything on that? Why the from the survey, why they don't continue? Do you recall?
We did ask those questions, but I don't remember for sure. There are a few reasons they provided. One is just try. Most of them, the answer is, I just tried my friend, someone gave to me at a birthday party, something like that. Those are main reasons. Another reason is didn't help me to quit smoking. And also someone said didn't satisfy me. There are tons of different reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a question here about the evidence on for secondhand. Again, it's emerging. Several studies have been done. Some show that at the levels of toxicants in secondhand vape is small. Others are starting to show some things. It also depends on what's being vaped. Don't know enough about that yet, and our literature synthesis is still in process. Is looking at that question. And we can send invitations to the January 13th webinar to participants. So if there are any further questions about this, we are more than happy to entertain them. Please write to us at OTRU. You can find contact information at www.otru.org, and we're more than happy to continue discussion about this now and in between and then on January the 13th.
Thank you so much, Rob and Bo. And thanks for everyone again who joined the webinar and who stayed on for our extra question period. Again, you'll be sent an email after this webinar that contains a link to an evaluation survey. Please take a few minutes to complete it. Again, it will help with our future webinar planning. Have a great day, everybody.